I guess I'm up. Next.
You're up.
We come together. Wow. Absolutely. So last week and this week, I've been doing a two-part talk on our spiritual community and that understanding that we're part of a greater unity vision and having a sense of the foundation upon which we are based, because it allows us then to move forward as we evolve and change and grow as spiritual community, as a unity movement, into that which we are becoming. And so I wanted to recap a little bit from last week. It's important to know our roots, and I talked to you about Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, who are the founders. I talked quite a bit about the 12 powers. Many of you were able to come and see the movie that was done on the 12 powers. We are so grateful for the Krauses, who donated these wonderful windows that have in them the 12 powers, so it can remind us of these attributes or these positive metaphysical tools that we can use. And so Charles, over time, formulated this idea, and he patterned it after the 12 disciples. It was, you know, a nice thing to do, but friends, when we think about unity and why we come together here in an understanding of metaphysics and of the greater principles that unity teaches, we recognize that at any time during circumstances in our life, when, say, we're faced with a health challenge or we're challenged with someone at work that we may not get along with, or in our families, we feel hurt or someone ignores us, or any of the things, maybe financially we're being challenged. And the Fillmores, Charles, created these wonderful attributes that we can call upon to remind us that we are so much more than what we see in our outer world at that human level and from those limited human perspectives. And we can draw upon any one of these attributes at any time to give us the strength or the courage or the understanding or the will or the love that will support us in and through any situation. And unity is also based on our five principles. Now, we sometimes call them unity principles. They're pretty much truth principles, and they were culled from all of the prevailing truth seekers at that time. Mary Baker Eddy, Emily Cady, I'm trying to think of some of the names. Anybody else want to call out? Ernest Holmes, thanks. That's what I couldn't think of. So all of these people at a particular time were going, wait a minute. You know, it doesn't seem that the theologies and the doctrines and the shoulds and the have-tos are what invite us into a life of fulfillment and joy and prosperity and goodness. There is something different. And there is a greater teaching that is available to us. Now, the Fillmores, more specifically than some of the other movements, patterned their teachings over time on Christ, on Jesus, because they felt that Christ was the master teacher. He was a rabbi. And he came not to break the law, but to fulfill that greater truth that we were being invited into an awareness we've talked about quite a bit. The presence of God is within us. It isn't from on high. It isn't something outside of us. It is around us. We see it in nature, but we understand it is inherent in the design of who we are. It is our own divine nature, and it is present with every one of us that we can draw upon and utilize. And the Fillmores recognize that when Jesus taught his master message, which was of love, he was speaking of the unconditional love. And of course, we hear unconditional love. It's like, what in the heck is that? Because emotionally, there's no part of us that can recognize unconditional love from that. When we're in a place of emotion, we're reactive at the human level to jealousy, we're to not enoughness, all of those things. The unconditional love that Jesus talked about was divine principle. It's oneness. And though other movements chose to go in other directions, the Fillmores ultimately came back and said, no, we stand in the teachings of Jesus Christ. And even though it is not a doctrine or anything that is imposed, it is an opportunity, an invitation for us all as we stand on the roots of this teaching of unity to understand and to draw forth for ourselves. The five basic principles that we operate from is there's only one presence and one power active in the universe and in my life. That's Godness. Not God the person, but Godness, the energy. Our essence is of God. Each one of us, we're divine. We're inherently divine in nature, created in that. And we can draw upon that when we go to these 12 powers, these 12 attributes, and call on something greater than what we see in our outer world. We call forth the divinity within us. We are inherently good. We were not created in sin. There is not original sin. We stand in that presence and power that we are all inherently good. The third principle is that we are co-creators, friends. And I'll get into this a little bit more as I talk. I brought it up last week. So many of the religions and the teachings that came down because of the old Hebraic laws were about the hierarchy and were about external power, the kings of the kingdom, we look to somebody else to guide us. All of that, it's intrinsic. It was unconscious. It was a part of the doctrine that became written into our churches, into a lot of our religions. And what Jesus was teaching and what the film was focused on is that we don't go to a power outside of us. We go to the presence and power within us. And therefore, we are co-creators. We're co-creators with God. And how we do that is through the thoughts that we hold in our minds. It is the activity of our intentions and the focus of our beliefs that draw from the limitless source and substance of all that is, that which we would call Godness, draws from that into outer expression as we focus. The law of mind action is how, Charles Fillmore wrote about it. And then many of you are familiar with Abraham Hicks, and they say the law of attraction and the secret, the law of attraction. You know, as there isn't anything new. Charles didn't make this up. It's what's so. It's like that when we understand it's a principle, it's a law of the universe, that thought and ideation is what Charles said, the mind of God in us. That is what creates into outer manifestation. So we are co-creators, and we are moving into a time of being collaborators. The fourth is that the principle that helps us in that ideation, in drawing forth those creative ideas from the limitless source, is prayer and meditation, where we take time apart to set aside the busyness of this outer mind, and we go to source. In his book, in Charles Fillmore's book, Atom Smashing Power of Mind, he says, Jesus warned us not to be anxious about temporal needs, but to pray, believing, and to bless and give thanks. Then right in the face of seeming insufficiency, we should be enabled to demonstrate plenty. The ideation, the awareness that God is limitless source, that we bless and give thanks. A simple word of blessing poured out upon that which we have, or that which we conceive as possible for us as sons or daughters of the all-providing God, will begin to release the superabundance of spirit substance. And we shall have an inner confidence and faith in the providence of our Father or of divine source, Godness. This is through prayer and meditation as we lay hold of these divine ideas. It allows us for a moment to step outside of our outer concepts, the old belief systems where we feel there is not enough, where we are not enough, where life is challenging, where life is difficult. Now, it doesn't mean that we do not face challenges and difficulties in our lives. It's not about, a lot of people at first thought, oh, well, you're sticking your head in the sand. It doesn't mean that there are not times when we all are called into a higher awareness and where we are called to do what is ours to do, to walk the difficult path. But what this is saying is when we go first in prayer and meditation, when we listen to the inspiration it gives us, Spirit gives us every tool we need to do anything out there that is before us. And when we lean on that presence and that power, when we call it forth, when we immerse ourselves in it, then the challenges that we face, we experience them differently. And we understand that we have everything we need to do what is ours to do. Which takes us, of course, to the fifth principle. And somehow we tend to forget that fifth principle. And it's the most exciting part of all the principles, because it's putting into action that which we know. Friends, it's like wrapping up the package and then you don't open it, you know? Wow! How wonderful it is to do the work, to do the releasing, to do the connecting to Spirit. But then it's about stepping forward into that truth and living it. Because until we draw it forth and until we live into it, we're just going to stay where we are. So these are the principles upon which unity has been founded. And it is our legacy to move forward from this in an understanding that we are ever evolving. That the concept of church is ever evolving. That unity as a whole movement has evolved. That we as spiritual humanity have evolved. Now back in the 70s, 80s, even into the 90s, there was a real trend of people moving into unity because it offered people a different choice, a different awareness other than that which felt possibly restricting or was a dominance of from on high. They found this wonderful place to explore and to expand into a greater consciousness. And how many of you have ever read a self-help book? Okay, every hand, I know. We all have. How wonderful it is to have that opportunity. Because all these wonderful books were written as people began to understand greater truths. And they weren't looking to somebody outside themselves, but an understanding of I within myself can change and grow and move and become. And so we got into a lot of the self-help opportunities. People became spiritual coaches. You know, and everyone was kind of like wild cats, right? You know how we've talked about herding cats. Well, everyone was going in their own direction. And appropriately, it was a time of personal healing. It was a time in our history when we were more self-focused. Appropriately. However, friends, that has begun to shift and to change as we continue as spiritual humanity to grow. And I love this scripture. This is one we don't hear as often. It's from the first book of Peter, from chapter 2. It's verses 1 and 2 and part of 5. It says, "So put away all malice and all deceit and hypocrisy and envy and all slander." What that means is putting aside all of the outer human emotional belief systems. Put that aside. Like newborn infants long for the pure spiritual milk that by it you may grow. Long for that spiritual milk, for that understanding, that inflow of divine spirit. Long for that you may grow. You yourselves are living stone. Sorry, you yourselves, like living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house. It's our longing for that deeper presence and that power that we can call forth to manifest into lives that are productive and creative and exciting and abundant and wonderful. And it reminds us that we're on a process of recognizing it through our own choices. We are the authors. We are the creators of what begins to be manifest in our lives. From Isaiah 60, verses 1 and 5, it says, "Arise and shine, for your light has come." Oh, my gosh. Do you ever feel light shining up and through and out of you? Oh, come on. Sometimes when you're happy, you know, when things are going right, don't you feel that like kind of a light, or maybe it's a hum, or what is it for you? How does it show up for you? Come on. Somebody. Glowing. Yeah, you feel it. You know, and don't, you know, people go, "God, you look really good today." Like I looked really bad all the other days, but you know, there's a something special. What else? What is it?
Energized.
Yeah. It says, "Arise, shine, for your light has come and the glory of the Lord has risen upon you." Now this is in a little bit more older verbiage, but the glory of pure being has risen upon you. You're open and it's flowing. Then you will see and be radiant, and your heart will thrill and rejoice, because the abundance of the sea will be turned to you. The wealth of the nations will come to you. Whoa, that's powerful stuff. Yeah. Oh, raw joy. There you go. You know, we all have the ways in which we experience the vibrancy of that presence. And in Mark 11:24, it goes on to say, "So I tell you, whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have received it and it will be yours," friends. It's a principle of the universe. It's not, you know, the proprietary part of unity is five principles. It's the law of the universe. And that's why so many of our master teachers beyond Jesus teach that. We have the power to literally co-create with the divine energy of all that is, the divine energy of the universe, that which we call God or pure being. And from that, we recognize we have choice. See, and not everyone is ready to do that. Because sometimes it is easier to have someone say, "Well, if you just do this, you'll be okay. Here, let me show you." And you know what? That's helpful, because there's times when we need that. Yet ultimately, friends, this spiritual journey that we as unity, as a part of a spiritual community are about being brave, wise, magnificent, light-filled spiritual warriors. Friends, we are stepping forward in our co-creative power. Stephen Covey said this. He said, "Every human," which Lisa could probably quote this verbatim, I know, because she teaches so much of Stephen Covey. "Every human has four endowments: self-awareness, conscience, independent will, and creative imagination." Now we understand creative imagination to be that inner divine presence of God in every one of us. The power, these give us, the ultimate human freedom. The power to choose, to respond, to change. The power isn't out there for somebody else to change us, to do something. It is our will, our power, our choice. And I love this little brief statement from Kenneth Hagin. He was a charismatic preacher. It's feed your faith and starve your doubts. Feed your... I thought I said it backwards. Thank you, dear. Feed your faith and starve your doubts. See, friends, that right there is all about choicefulness. What is the activity? You know, where do we place our thoughts, our beliefs, our focus? And on a daily basis, friends, oh man, we have some real opportunities in that, don't we? I sure do. Maybe you guys are already walking on water, but I still, on a daily basis, react when someone cuts me off in front of my car or goes in the line with, 25 items and they're only supposed to have 15. And I can get real self-righteous about that until I realize I have a few over the number two. And I'm like, oh, okay. But friends, those are just silly little examples. But the truth is that overall, we always have the choice to respond to any situation by where we place our focus. So it has been said, I'm sort of paraphrasing this, but it has been said kind of along this line that we're either part of the solution or part of the problem. That's kind of how it is. And that's not a make wrong. It's an invitation to understand. It's an invitation to understand. We have choice. Okay. So right now, our political arena is kind of a place, isn't it? So I'm not going to get into the politics one side or the other. You may also have something in your life that's blown up right now. What I am going to say, friends, is that those situations can be major distractions for us. Because what they do is they pull us off to that frenetic energy instead of, or they can, see, because it's our choice, but we can be pulled off into the drama, into the stuff, versus continuing to understand that what we focus on multiplies. That's the law of attraction. Our beliefs, our thoughts, what we focus on multiplies. And we are powerful beyond measure. We are powerful beyond measure. Charles and Cora Fillmore in Teach Us to Pray say, every experienced metaphysician knows that man's mind molds from an omnipresent element whatever takes form, shape, and intelligence and becomes part of his thought world. Knowing that our world is composed of what we have idealized, in other words, what we have believed in or thought about, should make us more watchful of the activities of our mind, of the activities of our Facebook, of our telephone conversations, of the monkey mind chat. Remember my little monkey mind? Teresa gave me that. That goes. We should be more watchful of the activities of our mind. Are we still harboring thought forms that are impeding our soul's progress? There are always better things just ahead for those who build in mind the living thought entities that go before and open the way. Wow! Who doesn't want to be on board with that, you guys? This is a powerful teaching. It's a powerful awareness. And we are a part of this greater unity vision. We are not just this little community, this building, this small group. We are a part of a unity spiritual movement with churches across the United States and around the world. We are being invited into the greater teaching of the Christ consciousness that is not about from on high down, from let's be a follower. We are being invited to be co-creators. We are invited now into a new evolution of spiritual community, of unity, to begin collaborating, friends, to begin collaborating. Because in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and we did all the self-help, and we were self-focused, and we did our own thing, we came together because we were still used to that paradigm or that modeling of you go to church every Sunday. Well, people's lives are busy now. You know, we're inundated with choices all the time. And there's been this sort of prevailing idea, well, I can just do it on my own. I don't have to be, you know, with some place in a building. And no, we don't. So what I'm going to say, so do that all week long. And then at a time when we have the opportunity to come together, friends, let's begin to make this more of a priority. Because we are evolving, people. We are evolving into a place of collaboration. When we talk about wanting peace and oneness in our world, it ain't going to happen when we sit at home alone. We can call forth the intention and the prayer, and that's a wonderful practice to do throughout all the other times of the week. And yet, when we have a time to come together, it's like, let's come and play. Let's come and support each other. Let's come and say, what are you going through? This is what I'm going through. Let's discover it. Let's see a new way. Let's put forth a powerful intention of what we desire. What are our goals? What do we want? Let's know and understand this principle that we draw that forth by the idealization a divine, pure source. We are invited, friends, to be part of a greater oneness, to come together, to practice, and to make a difference in our world. And while sometimes to me, it's like overwhelming. It's like, oh my gosh, you know, I've got my laundry, I have my cat boxes to clean out, I've got my errands to run, I've got my garage door that broke, I have the flood, I have the, you know, and I'm, you know, I'm busy, busy, busy. And yet, when I stop to center in, and then when I come together with you beloved people who are part of this journey, it is empowering. Where two or more are gathered together, we are living into a time of collaboration, and that is how we will begin to experience peace in our world, where we're willing to come together even though we may not think alike. We may not do things the same way. We may not like kind of how someone else does something. So we find a way, though, to embrace and to move forward and to share ideas and learn and grow. So out of a scripture from Ephesians 4, 11 through 13, it says, "So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors and teachers," we're all teachers, "to equip his people for works of service so that the body of Christ may be built up." In other words, the consciousness. We are the body. We are the living body of the consciousness of that higher Christ awareness, until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God and become, and the knowledge of the Son of God is not, "I am different than you." It is, "I recognize the presence of God within and I invite you to do the same." And become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. And Philippians, from Philippians 2, 1 through 4, it says, "So if there is any encouragement in Christ, any comfort from love, any participation in the Spirit, any affection, any sympathy, complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind." Okay, that's not talking about the Stepford Wives, people. No. Being of one mind means that we recognize we are all individuals and we are all inherently unique, yet we all have the capacity and the presence and the power to make a difference in our world by emulating the steps of Christ, by walking the path, by practicing the truth principles that we know. And doesn't it help, like, when you were in school, didn't you do homework sometimes together? And doesn't it help, I'm sure, in rehearsals, you sing, you practice on your own, but it helps them when you come together, there's a difference. There's a synergy that happens. There's an energy, friends. And so we are now about moving into a time of collaboration where we come together, where we invite others to do that and say, "Come on, this stuff is powerful. We've practiced these awesome things in our lives that create goodness and they create abundance, and you can be part of it." So I'm going to close for today with an invitation and an understanding, an invitation for each of you to move into the heart of your being, your own uniqueness, the way you let your light shine that's unlike anybody else. And to bring that forward, to nurture that, and to share one element of that with someone else in this room before you leave today. One little element that you know is the truth of who you are, and have them share that with you as well. So that as you go out into the world, together we can practice these principles. Principles that allow us to heal, principles that allow us to create. And so I will close with this quote from Carolyn Mace. Most of you know her as a New York Times best-selling author, and she says, "Our goal while on this earth is to transcend our illusions and discover the innate power of our spirit. We are responsible for what we create, and we must therefore learn to act and think with love and wisdom and live in service to others and all life friends. That's what this spiritual community is all about. I invite you into that practice. God bless.